I am Plante on the Line in Vancouver, British Columbia at thecommentary.ca. Jeff Berner joins me now. The singer, songwriter, and activist has a new album out, Grand Hotel Cosmopolis. There will be an event this Friday night as part of the Chutzpah Festival that will celebrate the album, but will also feature the debut of a musical theater piece set in 1930 Saskatchewan. I'll get Mr. Berner to tell us about the piece and more. The event is this Friday, the 1st of November, at the Wise Hall at 8 p.m. It's called Jeff Berner and T.J. Daw and Friends. Visit chutzpahfestival.com for tickets. We'll also discuss this new album about the myriad of timely political themes therein. The album is from Koch's Records, and you can visit jeffberner.com for more information on how to get the album. Please welcome to the Plante Online program, Jeff Berner. Mr. Berner, good morning.
Hi.
How are you?
Pretty good.
It must be exciting. This album is coming out. You'll get to celebrate it. Well, first of all, you're going to be touring the book in this country and then elsewhere, but then you get to celebrate it here in Vancouver with this event on Friday.
Yep. I'm going to be doing a big tour of Europe in November, December, to Vienna and Berlin and all over the place. But first, you got to put it out in your hometown. Vancouver.
Yeah.
It's where I was born and raised. So I'm going to celebrate with my friends and family and folks who've been coming to my shows for ages. So it's going to be pretty fun.
So Friday night at the Wise Hall, it's the show's called Jeff Berner and T.J. Daw and Friends. Other than T.J. and Friends, what can people expect on Friday night?
Okay, so here's the deal. The main thing... Well, there's two main things. One thing is I'm putting out the new album. So
uh-huh.
There'll be a big dance party, fun band show set where we'll play a lot of songs from the new album and some old favorites and really get people having a good time. That's going to be the party part of the show. And then before that, we're going to do this musical theater debut. That's going to be a 1 hour long abridged version of this musical I've been working on with T.J. Daw and my brother Toby Berner
uh-huh.
and Tallulah Winkleman and Jack Garten. And we've been working on this for quite a while since we got commissioned to start it at the Arts Wells Festival about a year and a half ago. And now the Chutzpah Festival is on board to let us do this debut sung performed reading where we'll take you through the whole play and most of the songs
mm-hmm.
and give people a look at this musical. It's kind of a klezmer musical set in the 30s in Saskatchewan. It's a Jewish village called New Chelm, and it's about a fake rabbi who comes and tries to trick the residents of New Chelm and then winds up staying. And there's whiskey running and stuff like that. And it's pretty fun. It's
yeah.
kind of like a, I would call it like a Brechtian musical because it's sort of like a bit of Brecht and a bit of Mel Brooks. You know?
And it sounds great. And so this will be fun for people when they show up at the Wise Hall to see this work in progress. And talk to me about that show and what it's been like to work with your friends and on this idea. And it must be fun to get to work with people you know and you know colleagues that you admire and the sort. Is it?
Yeah, I struggled with this idea for years. I knew that I had this musical in me, and I just couldn't find a way to make it happen. I thought, well, you know, I'm a decent singer-songwriter, and I'm a novelist. These skills should be, you know, I've done a little bit of theater. These skills should be enough to, make me able to do this multidisciplinary thing and write a musical. But every time I tried to do it, I just couldn't. It was just too much. So it really, everything started rolling when I got together with TJ and Tallulah and Toby and Jack, who are real theater professionals. You know, it's kind of a no-brainer when you think about it. Get some real theater people in, and they'll help you make a theater piece, you know. And the piece was, when I look back on what I started with, geez, it's comparatively just garbage. although I still like the idea,
yeah.
And that's why we're still working on it. It's like we've done so much. These four people I'm working with have done so much to make it a real theater piece and to make it an entertaining work. They know what theater is supposed to be. They've done it, between them, they've done a whole bunch of stuff. I mean, TJ is widely known as the king of the fringe.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
He'll often have three or four productions going in any given fringe festival, and they're all hits.
Yeah.
You know, he's a master, and the rest of them are similarly amazingly talented. So it was just like a great thing to realize that I had to let go of the nonsensical notion of the auteur, the genius who can do it all, you know, like then just ask for help from my friends.
Yeah.
You know, so. Yeah. It's really been an amazing process because I've learned so much about what I don't know about theater, you know?
Yeah, yeah. This new album, Grand Hotel Cosmopolis, is that how you pronounce it, or Cosmopolis?
Yep. No, Cosmopolis.
Cosmopolis,
that's how
it is.
I see it. Anyway.
Yeah. Did you have much? I guess with all artistic endeavor, you obviously had much, a lot of help. In terms of the writing of the songs and the sort, was that all you, or?
Again, I reached out to a lot of people with the songwriting. Some of them are just things that I sat down in the living room and just plunked out, you know.
Yeah.
But many of them are collaborations this time. I really opened things up. My producer is a great composer and a great record maker in his own right. Josh Dolgan performs as so-called. So one of the songs, Would You Hide Me, I suggested, you know, why don't I send you the words and you write the music, see what we get.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was really surprising and beautiful what he came up with. And it really made, it brought out aspects of the words that I hadn't thought about. And so, it was, and then another example is a song called Van Kimsty, which is a Yiddish song, where I came up with the lyrical concept and told it to Giselle Weber from Orchestra Criminal, a band from Montreal. She came up with the melody, and then I brought the melody and the concept to Michael Wex, the famous Yiddishist from Toronto, and he and I together molded a song in Yiddish. That's a new Yiddish song in the old tradition of the Jewish thief song. Because there used to be a real, you know, there were so many Jews in Eastern Europe that there wasn't just an overculture of Judaism. There was an underground thief, you know, underworld culture as well. And there are many songs from that tradition, and they're kind of awesome because they're kind of gangster, you know, and they're exciting, interesting, subversive songs. So I wrote my own, a new one in the old tradition with the help of Giselle Weber and Michael Wex doing the like really heavy lifting in Yiddish.
Yeah.
And so that was like an amazing thing to get to do, because when you write in a language that your parents sort of left behind because of cultural assimilation, you really feel like you're doing something to fight genocide.
Because
it feels like every time I sing in Yiddish, you know, Hitler loses again.
Exactly.
So
that's
another one where I went and collaborated with people. And, you know, I have my friend Carmack DeForest, who's a brilliant singer-songwriter out of Seattle, and I consulted with him about all of my lyrics, and he came up with suggestions that made all the lyrics better. And I just, that's a big thing about this record, is that I left behind the, like, genius auteur theory and really reached out to people to help me, and it's made all my work better. So I'm really pleased with that.
Yeah. Yeah, the album, I mean, as I was listening to it, even if I don't understand the lingo, it sounds as though, I'm assuming this, and you can confirm this or not, it's rooted in wisdom, that everything sounds deliberate. Do you write from that place?
Well, I try to write just about what's going on in my life, in my inner life, the lives of my friends, and what I see around me. So, you know, I'm doing my best. And the process of writing lyrics that you know you're going to sing in public is a good one for figuring out what you really think, because you're like, okay, I'm going to have to memorize this, and I'm going to sing this hundreds of times. So do I really mean this, or do I mean something slightly different? Maybe I should look at this again, you know? The process of memorization is one where, and the process of learning something orally demands like a deeper understanding of what you've just written yourself than if you just blast it out on the computer kind of thing.
And the album opens with just a great song called "Not the Jew I Had in Mind," with permission from Thomas King, It's a very thoughtful piece, because I think, and I'll ask you about the connection with Thomas King in just a sec, but the questions that you pose, I guess, in that song, are those things that you've had to contend with through your life, say?
Oh, yeah. That's the thing where, as I tour around, there's often times when people who aren't Jewish will say, Are you really Jewish? You know, they'll like try me out on some Hebrew to see if I know it or something like that. Or they'll just ask straight out if I'm really Jewish. And they're doubtful, you know, like, and then there's also conservative Jews and Orthodox Jews who reject the Jewishness of those of us who are left wing and more socially, progressive or whatever.
Yeah.
And so there's an overall, like, you know, thing where it's like, oh, well, we'll let the white culture decide who is Jewish and who is not. And it's like, it's very toxic. It's especially hard on young people who are from whatever family background and identify as Jewish and are trying to go on a journey in their lives as a Jew, and they've got people saying, well, not really for you.
Yeah.
You know, it's a very common thing. And as I've been playing it live in the lead up to releasing the album, it's been really striking how people have come up to me, some of them like on the brink of tears, just saying, oh, well, you've written my theme song.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's a big deal to me for people to say that.
Yeah. You know? And that's something that Thomas King, he's written about it, and it's something that a lot of his work, I think, has contended with, hasn't it?
Yeah, well, this is the thing, is that I wrote Not the Jew I Had in Mind, inspired by this essay that's part of a series of lectures by Thomas King, and this lecture is called Not the Indian I Had in Mind, and it's about how he, as an indigenous guy, is constantly dealing with people who have certain expectations about what a real indigenous person should be like, what they should look like, dress like, eat like, you know, and that, like, somehow if he's not living in some way that the white people perceive to be authentic and original, then he's really not, he can't really lay claim to First Nationshood, you know, and it's very common with white attitude towards indigenous people, and it was just such a funny way to say it, Not the Indian I Had in Mind, that I had to, I got this chorus in my head going, you are not the Jew that I had in mind. Yeah. So I just had to write to him and say, look, I have this thing going, but I know that I should ask you first before I do anything with it. And he wrote back the next day saying, yeah, go ahead, you know, and do that. But people can't. Maybe someday I'll write something inspired by one of your songs. So that was pretty neat.
That's really cool. Yeah, it really speaks to our times, our political times, doesn't it? I mean, this toxic attitude that we all have to contend with, in terms of how we view one another, and it's not just how one views themselves. It's how other people view them. I mean, there really is a burden on all of us, isn't it?
Yeah, we're all trying to figure out who we are as we go through our lives, and we should be free to figure that out without people telling us how we ought to be, or whether or not we have a right to be one thing or another, you know, one way or another. You know, that goes with, like, the attitudes people have about trans folks as they're trying to fight for their rights in our society, and it has to do with, you know, the way we run this country as a white supremacist state, and, you know, all these things. We really have to fight so that people can be free to be who they know they are.
Yeah, I want to jump about on the album here, but pieces that I found interesting, pieces that I liked. OU Survivalist, I think is another one of those pieces on the album that really speaks to our times and sort of the attitude that you rise up against. I mean, this is something that I think we're seeing a lot, isn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's supposed to be a satirical, funny song that sort of laughs a bad set of ideas out of the room. But these set of ideas are really prevalent in our discourse or in people's minds. You know, we know that life support systems for our society are breaking down, and that things are breaking down, and that probably not everyone is going to make it out of this crisis, this climate catastrophe. Uh-huh. And so there are people who are thinking, well, I've got mine. I'll be all right. I've been camping a lot of times. I'll go out into the woods and be by myself and with my favorite, you know, people, maybe, and my horse and my dog and my gun. You know, and then I'll be all right. So I'll just stockpile this and that. But it's just so ridiculous, because when the seasons become unstable, food insecurity will just be totally unpredictable. You'll never know how you're going to get by. And what we really have to do is get together and work together as people to make sure everybody's okay.
Right.
Instead of, like, going off on our own. Nobody's going to make it if we all go off on our own like that.
Yeah.
We need to do this together. We need to fix this together. And so the Survivalist is just like a, you know, just being mocking these people. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to go shop at Mountain Equipment Co-op and get all the stuff and get some ammo. And it's just like, no, you're not. That is a very silly idea. So let's just laugh at that.
Yeah.
But it's, like, important because it's prevalent also on the left as well as the right. You see hippie folks going, oh, I'm going to go off the grid and this and that, as if, like, there's no carbon input output, you know, in, like, all the stuff that's involved going off the grid, you know.
Yeah, and I think that's why a lot of people have a problem with liberalism, if you will, being in the center. You really don't stand for anything, do you, other than looking out for yourself?
Well, that's my perspective as a lefty guy. You know, I really believe that there's, like, two perspectives on life. It's either the right-wing one, which is, well, great men do great things, and all the little people are there to make that possible, and some people are just not that useful, so to hell with them. It's the right-wing, you know, perspective. And then there's the left-wing perspective, is that we all owe each other loyalty and respect, and we all owe each other rights and the chance to make it, and we all are going to do better if we just help each other out together. You know, those are the two worldviews, really, in a nutshell. And you either have one or you have the other. And a lot of times when people call themselves centrists, if you really boil it down, they do think there's a bunch of humanity that they're not too... It wouldn't be too sad about, like, jettisoning.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, it's easy to not care about certain things.
And, yeah, you and hear certain, like, people, centrists saying things like, "Well, if you can't afford market rent in Vancouver, well, you shouldn't live there."
Right.
You know, it's like, oh, I see. We'll just throw away all the poor people in Vancouver. We'll throw them out. That's terrific. You know.
Yeah.
And you know, you get, or like you see in the United States, centrist politicians.
Sure,
saying,
yeah.
Oh, well, you know, we just have to, we can't really have Medicare for all. We're just going to fix it a little bit. Some people are going to still die from not being able to afford insulin, but, you know, it's complicated.
Yeah. So throughout the album, as I'm listening to it, it talks about our time. So it's not terribly pleasant, the things that you talk about. But there is as I look at the album on the whole, and as I'm certain parts of it that I enjoy, there is a great deal of optimism. I mean, you still have hope, don't you?
Oh yeah, definitely. And that's a matter of identity rather than evidence for me. Like, I'm a person who is going to behave as if there's hope till I drop, and that's my identity. It doesn't matter to me that maybe the evidence suggests otherwise sometimes. That's what that song, Zognit Kemal, which is on the record, is all about.
Yeah.
It's an old Yiddish song that was the anthem of the partisan Jewish fighters against the Nazis in World War II, where they said, you know, the title of the song is, don't never think you're on the final road. You know, it's a song where it's like people wrote that in the woods, surrounded by the German army. And things didn't look so great. The evidence didn't point in the direction of hope. But this song inspired people to keep going. And we, as a people, survived because we behaved as if there was hope, even when things looked unbelievably bleak, you know, and that's what we have to do again. We have to behave as if there is hope, whether or not we're certain that's the case.
Yeah. And I think that's something that people, whether you're left or right nowadays, I think that's what people lose sight of. I think we tend to think that things are dire, and they are. And there are obviously urgent matters that need to be dealt with politically and otherwise, but we mustn't lose sight of hope, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's just how I prefer to be. That's how I prefer to live with the time that I have. So, you know, I mean, if people give in to despair, then that's, you know, I understand that because things are really tough. But sometimes we go in and out of despair, and when people are ready to, like, do stuff, I'm ready to work with them, you know? And that's why we started this new political party in B.C., the B.C. Eco-Socialists.
Uh-huh.
And it's kind of a big week for me. Like, we were launching the play, the album, and on Monday, a new political party, far to the left of the NDP and far greener than the Greens, and we're going to try to give people some hope again.
And is it a party that you'll run under one day, say?
Maybe like in some riding where nobody else wants to run or something like that. But I'm not. My job as a traveling accordion player is too fun to like give up to sit in meetings or go to the legislature or something like that.
And it has been such a remarkable career for you because you have been able to use your art to further these ideas that you want us to think about, and that in of itself must be a great reward, isn't it?
Yeah, it feels really good, and super lucky, super privileged, and it's also powerful to be part of a tradition of traveling, singing troubadours, you know, because we've always been there. We've always been there for thousands of years. There's been us, people who travel from town to town, playing songs for people, giving them the news, giving them some, reminding them what's important, getting people to feel something, giving people some laughs. You know, this is like the Woody Guthrie tradition, the old medieval troubadour tradition. This is the old Jewish wine cellar singer tradition, and it's a big deal to get to be part of it.
Now, this album, Grand Hotel Cosmopolis, can people get that? They get it the normal way that people get music nowadays. They can get it off Amazon too, can't they?
I suppose. I was kind of like looking to getting it off there, but the main way I'd like people to get it is go to their local independent record store.
Absolutely, yeah.
It'll be out on vinyl, and right. Places like Red Cat Records and High Life, are going to have it. So it'll be out there that way, and that's the best way to
absolutely
get music is to go and shop in your local record store, chat with the clerk who's always knowledgeable about what stuff is happening and what's cool, and hear something being played on the store stereo that you never heard before, and that kind of thing. It's like I just love being in a record store, I think people should just go there for their own mental health as much as anything.
I was being cheeky when I, for people listening to us about bringing up Amazon, because you do bring up the owner of Amazon why don't we just take the billionaire's money away, which I thought was rather clever and amusing.
Yeah, I call him that schmuck from Amazon. Yeah, well, I mean, these guys are the problem.
Right.
They have to be eliminated one way or the other. We've got to tax them out of existence or put them in prison or whatever we got to do. But there's trillions of dollars that are holding in offshore accounts that could be used to put people to work doing really important stuff, Green New Deal stuff and healthcare stuff. It's all money they've hoarded, and we know it's there. And the government doesn't want to get it, and that's where we're going to get the money to transform society and make things fair.
Jeff, it's been a pleasure speaking with you. I wish you every success with all of your endeavors this week.
Thanks a lot. I really appreciate you giving me the chance to get some exposure for this stuff.
You're very welcome. Jeff Berner and TJ Daw and Friends is Friday, the 1st of November at the Wise Hall, 8 p.m., Visit chutzpahfestival.com for tickets. The album, Grand Hotel Cosmopolis, from Cokes Records, is available wherever you get records. Check out jeffberner.com for more information on him and how to get the album. Jeff Berner joined me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plata.